You're listening to Winchester University's only college radio station.
Dear white people, the minimum requirement of black friends needed to not seem racist has just been raised to 2. Sorry, but your weed man, Tyrone, does not count.
Dear white people, please stop touching my hair. Does this look like a petting zoo to you? This just in, dating a black person to piss off your parents is a form of racism. Right!
Welcome back to the Black Is Break with yours truly, KC Lehman. We have a lovely roundtable in the house tonight. Tonight's guests are Chris, Leisha, the other Chris, and Toria, and Eli in the background, as you will hear from time to time. Last weekend, we took a group field trip to see the film Dear White People, and partly to support our good brother and friend, Brandon Bell, who will be here with us later. He plays the character of Troy Fairbanks in the film, but also just to support this film that was written and directed by a young black man. Is Julian Simeon, I believe his name is. And because this film was like the darling of all indie film fests over the last year. And I mean, how could we not, as the Black Is podcast team, see a film called Dear White People? I mean, that's just written straight for us. So we got together to talk about it. And there's a few topics that come on the table, and I think we can take them one by one. There's 4 primary characters in this film. And let me say that this is a spoiler alert. So if you have not seen this film, turn the podcast off. Come back after you've seen it. But the 4 main characters are Samantha Price, and Chris and I have defined her as the militant but tragic mulatto. Anybody have any different ideas as to how they would define Sam, as she is called? We all in agreement with that. Okay, yeah. Sounds good. Yeah. And then there's Troy Fairbanks. He is the legacy kid, with also a legacy father. Lionel Higgins, who is the alternative black character for a variety of reasons. And then Coco Connor, who we have defined as the transitioning, self-hating, moving on up black character. She has layers.
She's just loaded. She's loaded.
Yeah. So let's talk briefly, you guys, about these characters and what we thought about them and how realistic they were. And do we know these people? Can we identify with these people? Let's start with Sam, the militant but tragic mulatto.
Now, this is because her character was interesting, since she seems to be the focal point, I think, somewhat surrounding the movie, since she's the one who gets to be the voice and is the one that's pushing things for change in this movie. And it's interesting that she seems so hardcore and all about it and, you know, so revolutionary and all. Like, I love everything black, and black is great on everything. And then as the movie goes on, you slowly start to peel some things away from her, some secrets, I guess, that she's keeping and really not being herself. And I was shocked that a lot of it came hearing her story about her father.
Right.
And that, you know, he was a white man. And that story she told about, you know, when she was 9 and she didn't want to hold his hand, people would, you know, she'd actually, like, basically, she was upset with him. He'd be like, he's not my daddy and all that. Right. I'm like, that's some major shit
right there, right?
That you really try to keep a secret. And I would think in 2014, if she's mixed, like, okay, you know, you identify as black, I mean, that's saying something still. But the fact that she kept, like, everything up, like, she didn't really admit that she was, like, people, I guess, assumed she might be mixed, but she never wore that.
Right.
It still was, that story of her father was shocking, and really not trying to identify with that part of her. But, you know, she likes a lot of it that would, I guess, would be related to that. But she's so, in a sense, seems to be ashamed to be associated with it.
Right. And I find that to be not an unfamiliar story, particularly when we talk about children or people who are of mixed race or biracial. You hear that very often, you know, either one extreme is that I'm very proud to be mixed, I'm not black, I'm black and white, or I'm black and whatever. Or the other extreme of I'm about to turn some shit down up in here, Nat Turner type, right? Mm-hmm. All because I've heard, and I'm not mulatto, but I've heard from those that are biracial how tough it is, that you almost have to pick a side. You know, you can't, you're not black enough for the black people. You're not white enough for the white people. So you have your own cause, right? So for me, Sam, like, I kind of pegged her character from the very beginning watching her. It was like, okay, this mulatto girl about to go 10 black to the 10th power, you know, even though we know she's biracial, you know. But it was tragic to hear her her being ashamed of her dad, mm-hmm. you know, her being ashamed of her dad, which for me was like, you're missing the whole point then about being black, because being black means I get to define it as I want to define it, and I'm black with a white daddy. Mm-hmm. Take it or leave it, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that walk, you know. I don't know what it means. I've never been told I'm not black enough for black people or white enough for white people. You know, I don't know that story, but you will find many people out there who have that story, so they have to find something to latch onto. And I think for her was, I'm going to prove to the black people that I'm black enough for the black people. Mm-hmm. Although her love interest, her true love interest, was white, and her peg was the blackest brother on campus. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was like, wow. But I wasn't shocked by her character. It was like very kind of predictable, mm-hmm. I'd like to say. Like, I just knew, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like at some point we're getting ready to find out that she's mulatto, you know, and she's struggling with her mulatto.
Right.
And I love that that was the term that came up in mulatto.
Somebody say mulatto.
Yeah, because it's like historically the term, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, I mean, it's like equivalent to calling a black person nigga. It's, yeah. it's mean, right. You know, and you, various levels of it, from quadroon to octoroon. But it's spewed throughout so much of American literature like it's just nothing, like, man. But it's used to explain how white or how black, actually how black a person is. But yeah, her arc, somewhat predictable. I found it funny that people kept comparing her to Denise Huxtable, who is not a mixed race person as far as we're supposed to believe.
I thought she was Freddy, obviously.
Yeah,
me.
I can see that too.
I totally. I was like, oh, the mixed, like, activist chick.
Yeah.
She had some outfits that was very, very Freddy-ish too. You know, like, yeah. Toward the end, I was like, wait, is it? That's a different world outfit.
I can't believe I didn't even think of Denise.
Yeah. I don't know.
She wasn't an activist at all.
No, she wasn't.
She just wanted to be herself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then I guess we can move on to Troy, the legacy kid. I feel like being from L.A., we know these kids.
Jack and Jill.
Yeah. Links. The kids who did the cotillions and all those events. Mm-hmm. So, you know, his father is the dean, even though he's apparently more qualified than the president, who we find out has been his classmate and apparently his rival. Competition, yeah. His rival all these years. And he has a need to meet dad's criteria. He has a need to follow in dad's footsteps. And I don't know whether it's a need or it's just straight up, it's what he has to do. Mm-hmm. He's not really given any options. And he self-medicates in his bathroom, smoking his little bowls and writing jokes in his bath towel. But the expectation for kids that are like that, that you have to meet these particular criteria, the pressure to fit this particular mold is just, it's necessary. And you guys, forgive us for this beeping in the background. I have no idea mm-hmm. where that's coming from. I don't think that's our house. I guess somebody else is having home alarm issues in the neighborhood. But yeah, I found that to be interesting. And it's so funny, honey. I thought about you, even though you're not a legacy kid to this level, but having history of certain academic and social connections and the expectation that you're going to be a part of it.
He would be one. For me, I identify with both of the males out of the four characters, the two males. He would, because you come from a family, or you know, who's done well for themselves or in a nice position, and it would feel like, because black people are known for struggling, the fact that you made it out is like you can't fail. Right. I mean, it's almost like Blue Ivy can't not be nothing in her life. Like, seriously, like, if you know, they make like, if you come from a bad place, if you don't turn out well, oh, well, you came from a shitty place. So we understand that. But you had what we didn't have. So you shouldn't be doing this kind of stuff. And I kind of feel like you had that pressure of, I never had it like that. But you just want to be like, all right, my parents have succeeded. I want to at least do the same. So I felt him on that. Clearly his father is on that, you know, I got to work twice as hard to get twice as far mentality that a lot of our parents have, you know, where you had to work twice as hard to get on that level. And he's basically taking out his frustration with his son, having to compete with this other kid. And you're like, who the heck? But yeah, I saw that in him, but I never had a father who pushed me to that end of just basically be him. And however I made it, I need you to be better than me, and I'm already good. I mean, that's a lot of pressure on a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just speaks to, like, also, to be great, you have to be better than the white person.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when you're better than the white person, then you've accomplished and you're great. And that sucks.
Right.
You know, that in order for you to feel valid as a black person, you've got to be better than the white kid next to you.
Right. Right. And then, standard.
Right. And then it's like we become compliant. And I think a lot of us, even sitting at this table, are kind of along those lines, because if our parents struggled, then they set the expectation that you make it, right? Mm-hmm. Like I smell this in Baldwin Hills and Ladera Heights all day, every day, right? Mm-hmm. And it's this, I'm great because I'm good as white people, when you should be defining your greatness for yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's to see it on film like that and say, wow, we do some disservice to our children, right? Because all they're going to do is just get a good job working for somebody else. Right.
Yeah.
It's going to get a six-figure salary working for someone else. But we're not pushing them to define yourself, make it for yourself. Like, making it means you're in the same neighborhood as white people, and you drive the same car as white people, and you go to school with the white people, and you're as articulate as the white people. You've made it, you know. And he didn't want that pressure. Dude just wanted to, you know, light up, maybe become a comedian, write jokes. Mm-hmm. He didn't have a chance to define who he was going to be. It was already defined for him. And the definition of success was being as good or equal to white. Mm-hmm. And that sucks, because it makes you think, like, wow, we're raising a lot of folks like that.
Well, most of us, the standard is set by our parents. I don't think the average person comes to an idea of what they want to do outside of a foundation that their parents set for them until they reach a certain point. Unless from the gate, you've never agreed with what your parents have taught you. And you were just always a maverick, like, what y'all are about is not what I'm about. But especially for black people. And I would like to say this is possibly regional. I don't know. It could very well be something that's nationwide, but I feel like LA in particular, because of the culture, this city provides, there is, and the umbrella of Hollywood that unfortunately covers all of us, there is this idea of this is what successful looks like, and that standard more than likely is set by somebody not black, unfortunately. Or if you are going in entertainment, possibly it is set by a black person. But the idea that this is where you need to be, and folks operate like that. So, you know, you have your black affluent areas, but some areas are more affluent than others. Right. So you have the idea of the people who grew up in Ladera and what that experience is like. The people who grew up in View Park in Baldwin Hills and what that experience is like. And everybody else just kind of gets in where they fit in. If you're a black person that grew up on the West Side, or, you know, God forbid, the Valley, you a completely different type of person. Yeah, we don't even know what you about. Right. And you know, it's that kind of thing. You got folks who grew up on the East Side who have a very different idea of those of us who are just west of Western. Like, that's a whole nother breakdown in regards to how we view ourselves and each other and what it means to move on up, or, you know, be different.
And I would say it is a nationwide thing. You know, I think it certainly is when you go back east, like when we were speaking earlier before we started recording, being at an HBCU, you see that all day, every day. Like the Troys are all throughout the campus.
Okay.
Right? I'm going into politics. Why? Because my great grandfather was in it, my grandfather was in it, and my father was in it. You know, even the idea of like, I'm a light skinned black. You know, we are a mixed heritage and we're going to keep it that way. And we're not going to mess around with you dark skin blacks. So it's very, 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 I think, prevalent nationwide. I think even more so when I left California and went to school in Virginia and saw this, was like, whoa, what? Like, what? Like, for real, for real? Like,
I could imagine it being heavier in the South.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, like straight up deep legacy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you are an AKA because Great Granny Alice was an AKA. And Great Granny Alice didn't marry nothing darker than a paper bag, and neither will you. And anybody that takes your hand in marriage will have an MD at the end. Yeah. And you have these folks walking around, you know, I'm going to be a doctor. Why? Like, shit, because my last name is, you know, Peabody.
And this is what,
and this
we,
is
do.
What we do. Right? We got to keep, because there is a such thing as old black money. Like, you know, we always talk about old white money. Oh, but there's old black money. And I ain't talking about like Junebug passing it down to little Junebug because they hustling in the street, you know?
But old for real paper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I liked his character because I thought that usually like that type of a character is usually a little more of a jerk.
Pompous.
Yeah. And I thought they did a good job of making him like, you know, likeable. Like, see, yeah, like you could see that he was like a decent guy and had a decent heart. And even though he was that character, like the privileged, whatever, like he still, which I mean, that was what I liked about the whole movie, was each character had obviously a little depth to them.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Which is what we are missing.
Yeah.
Know? And funny thing is, he was actually forced, I think, out of the four, now I've thought about it, to actually. He couldn't change. You know, the other three at least had an option. There didn't seem to be too much of a parent getting in the way, or at least one that could actually do something. Like, he had a parent, like, if I want to veer to the left, I can't because my father is going to basically force me to veer back in the other direction.
And like, he's on this campus.
Yes, and he, which was probably pre-planned already.
Right.
And he's like, you gonna do, like, damn, like, no choice. Mm-hmm. He's like, you gonna be president. I don't want to be president. Well, that ain't acceptable.
Right. He's like, obviously this is the next way for you to go. If you didn't get house president, time for you to be school president. And I think I completely agree with everything everybody has said at the table. I think the other thing that stood out to me is that he wasn't mad at his position at all. He accepted it. It was what it was. You know, he didn't want to disappoint his dad. And when he goes to the dad about the relationship situation, I think that was the only point that was kind of like, you know, when he
that
broke
was
up.
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, I'm doing this because you want to build this alliance, but it's not necessarily a fun or good situation for me.
Yeah.
And was it just me, or did that seem apparent from the moment we see those two characters together?
Yeah, like there was some. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, she hyped. So yeah, and then there was the character who I think probably sparks the greatest amount of conversation, the alternative black, Lionel Higgins, just because, one, I think that character is probably more prevalent in current society than ever, just because we now live in a world where people are just more open and more diverse and more accepting of people being different. And I think black people are at a point where we truly understand how very diverse we are, especially without having a common issue in which to rally around. People have a greater opportunity to express their very, very unique selves, however it is they want to do it. And so he's the big afro wearing, quietly but not closeted, gay writer who's trying to figure out exactly, he doesn't fit in anywhere.
There like is sci-fi and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm.
There is no click for him. And I love the scene where he's trying to imagine himself in different clicks and what that would look like. And don't know, I felt like his character had a lot of depth. For him to be the one at the end that really is like the "we are not gonna take this shit" character, I love that. I felt like that really gave him a whole nother layer, because not that you weren't sure how he would respond in that situation, but because I felt like the story made a point to keep him from fitting in somewhere. You just didn't know how he would respond. Mm-hmm. And so I like that character a lot.
And I think it speaks to the story of many young blacks who don't necessarily fit in, mm-hmm. and giving them the voice or giving them the okay. You know, we don't know how many of our black children are suffering like that because they don't want to be, you know, in the typical hip hop crew or,
right.
you know, beat you up crew or the power to the people crew. Like, and like you said, it's probably more prevalent, but that's a voice that we don't often hear from, mm-hmm. and that we don't necessarily empower and mm-hmm. say, "You're good."
Right.
You know, there was that one scene between him and Troy on the stairs when Troy was like, "Why you never asked me for a haircut?" You know, like, "You cool, dude. Like, it's all good." Mm-hmm. And I think we need to open the door more so that we do broaden the definition. Like you said, we're more aware of it being diverse or how diverse we are, but giving those kids that voice too, because they're out there.
Yeah.
You know, they're out there.
Well, I was happy that they sort of touched on him not fitting in with the black community because, well, I can say at my school, like, I would always joke with everyone because all the black people hung out with each other. And I was just like, "So there's no gay black people that go here?" Like, nobody, you know, because it was just, you wouldn't have, if you came out, then you'd probably hang out with white people, unfortunately. Okay. That was just how it was. And
or
like,
would it be gay people?
Well, they didn't really have like a gay
black group.
No.
Or just like no. a
gay Would he hang out with the gay
period.
White group?
Yeah.
But then he'd still be.
It would be white
different.
People, though.
Right.
Even if it was a gay group. Yeah. It's just there was not a black gay like presence. Mm-hmm. And then now, you know, obviously it's coming on 15 years since I've been in college. And just on Facebook seeing like, now I see like the people that are out of the closet, you know, that weren't out of the closet in college because they hung out with black people. Mm-hmm. And that was just the price that they paid in college. And my college, at least, I can say. And it was a white college, I feel like, similar to what was depicted. And that was the reality. And I always felt so bad because, I mean, there was people that was so obvious, but mm-hmm. they just couldn't. I mean, they didn't come out of the closet, I guess.
I would say UCLA was the exact same way.
Mm-hmm.
There was a black clique, and then there was a gay clique. There was no black gay clique.
No. Not that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like that because when he went to that dorm and sat down, it was like, and they had, you know, show like all these different groups of black people, and he couldn't go to any table.
Yeah.
He was like, "I don't fit in any of these. I'm not wealthy. You know, I'm not hood enough. I'm not, you know, hip-hop," like all that. And he's just like, "I'm sitting over here." And I think Jude asked him a question. He was like, "What is like when you're not black enough for the black people or black enough for the white people?" And he was like, "I think nowhere." Right. You were like, "Damn!" Like, because he's using white people. The white guys are fucking with him, mm-hmm. and teasing him about being gay. He's not. He's just all by himself, not bothering them. But they all they have to do is look over there, and they irritated. And you felt him because he was like, "I like Star Trek," and he just asked him like, you know, Kirk or Spock, and you're just like, "Oh, okay." You know, I'd never had that issue, but I could see people like, "You watch that show," and you know, like you have to like certain black stuff,
mm-hmm.
or you know, you're not. Like, and, you know, Sam's character dealt with that, too. Like,
yeah.
you know, if you like, you know, white artists, I forgot, what's the main white artist he brought up?
Taylor.
Yeah, like, you like Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah. And, like, she can't admit none of this. And you're like, really?
That's one of my favorite things about the movie was, like, just showing the diversity of taste that people have, you know? Just because you're black doesn't mean you only listen to black music. Like, there's tons of black people that listen to all kinds of music. And I just feel like you don't get to see that on TV, like.
Right.
You just don't. Like,
he's a black kid who's into rock, and people are like, "That's strange." But they're like, "Well, black people created rock and roll."
Right.
I mean,
there's
if you want to get technical, you know, why would I not be into rock and roll? We created it. But, you know, now people are like, "Oh, and you don't like trap?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?"
and it's like, and if you don't like it, if you don't like something that's supposedly black, somehow that makes you off kilter or
you lose some black points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is crazy. Like, we were talking about that when we were making this list, the idea of quintessential blackness. Like, there are black people who can only identify with films with black characters. So if you go see something that doesn't have black people in it, they wonder why. And it's like, really? You can't identify with just human beings? If they're not the same color as you, it doesn't make, the story doesn't make sense to you. You know, but there are some people that's the only way, that's how they see the world. You know, and so, yeah, I agree with
you. And he was a shy, and he was the shy kid.
Yeah.
Out of the group, yeah. And just like, I don't want to approach, like, man.
Right. You got all these things. And then, who, look, she might have been the funniest character. I really loved her. Coco O'Connor.
Her real name is Calandria.
Calandria. Look, on the heels of our ethnic name podcast that came out last week. the transitioning, self-hating, moving on up black. What can we say about Coco, a.k.a. Calandria?
That she's not that black. That's what she
said. Yeah, I'm not that dark.
Right. That was hilarious.
Yeah. The first thing I read when her character comes on the screen, you're just like, okay, you're the black person who doesn't like themselves. Like, from jump, it's just looking in the mirror like,
the blue eyes.
I don't like what I see. Yeah. You know, like, damn, okay. And then just, I went on and, oh, you got to get my hood. And you're like, and you know, she hated. Cause she hate being from the hood, and everything seemed like what the hood represents as a black woman. She's like, I hate that, and I don't want to be that. And anything that pulls her back to it, she just gets irritated to the point where it feels like she don't like being around black people. Mm. It's like, well, and I have to, you know, fit in that black stuff, and I don't know if I like that.
But it's almost impossible for her to get away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if she didn't like black people, or more or less she didn't like herself. I just found her, you know, as, you know, a black girl not comfortable in her own skin on that black campus. You know, she immediately wiped off black men. And I don't know if that came from the idea of, like, she had been wiped off a couple of black men's lists. So she then in return said, I'm not messing with any black men. I did see her struggle to try to get out and become something different or quote unquote better. But I think it stemmed from the fact that she just didn't like herself. Right. And that's common across all groups of black girls, you'll find that in any socioeconomic group of black women, that you're not comfortable in your own black skin, right? Either I don't like myself because I'm too light and I can't fit in, or I don't like myself because I'm too dark and I can't fit in. Like, how can I just love being a black woman when images of beauty have been thrown all across the media that don't look like me? Mm-hmm. You know, wide nose, wide hips, little, you know. Well, not too much about us is little, but but even on the reverse of that, right? Like a little black woman, right? Who then has conscious issues because she's not toting the butt and the hips that she's supposed to be carrying as a black woman, right? Because there are all these stressors put on you as a black woman, which you must be, quote unquote, must be. So I think hers stem more from a lot of like just not being happy with herself. She did not like who she saw in the mirror. Hence, we saw her struggling with not just her physical, but even who she decided to hang out with and talk to. And then she was going to throw herself on the line to be the host of the little white party, you know, just to get out. Like, she was looking for self, for some love of herself out there in all the wrong places.
Yeah, she had the time where she was carrying the typical, the dark skin burden character, along with being basically the representation of all these love and hip hop bullshit. Like, she's that woman where like, okay, you need me to do that? Okay, yeah. I'll do that. I'm trying to get, I'm trying to marry up. I'm trying to be around people who got paper. You know, the rest of them seem to, you know, as long as you, there wasn't that, I need you to have, I need you to be a certain class, kind of like somebody I need to be into. She seemed like that class was a big thing for her.
Yeah. And that she was carrying the burden of proving that I'm not a ghetto black girl. Right? Like, I got into this college. I belong here. But let me do everything that I need to do to let you know that I am not the stereotypical ghetto black girl from the hood. You know, when in actuality she could be, but she didn't know how to wear it and be proud of it.
And there were certain things that she fell back on, which made her fall into stereotypes, like the contact lenses and the hair and all the kind of things that people will attach to folks who subscribe to that belief. And just wanting to have some level of status, which I felt like was coming through her blog, you know, wanting to be popular and be accepted, and comparing herself to the Freddie, you know, the militant a mixed race girl, and that in and of itself also bringing her shame of her complexion also to the surface. Like, why am I not as popular? Why am I not considered as much of a draw as this girl? Yeah, she was deep.
The word that I would think of also is like fame whore, sort of. So yeah, like her motivations. I mean, it all ties in, but I also like that they gave her that side, because it sort of explains a little bit more, like, you know, she saw what it would take. And like you said, I mean, it really is sort of like a statement on who's on reality TV and how they end up doing the things that they do and what it takes to get attention on reality TV is to act ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of facing that reality, I guess. Like, I've been trying to move away from that, but that's what it will take for me to get kind of what I want. So it was kind of an interesting dilemma that she had.
Mm-hmm. No, she's almost like the hood girl who wanted to be Whitley.
Yeah, exactly. Except she wanna be bougie.
Except she's not anywhere near that quote unquote trying to pass level. Like, oh, you're clearly a black person and just having to deal with that, trying to be Whitley, but you're, you know, a dark skinned black person and just having to fight that every day. You know, it's like even where she was from, and dude, and from the beginning, asked her a question. He was like, "Oh, I'm from," yeah. And she was kind of like, "I don't want to say." And he was like, "Oh, you one of them black people? Okay." Mm-hmm. And then that's when she was like, "Oh, you know, now I got to figure out what to do to get in with this dude, because he already questioning me and having doubts." And then she just was okay cooning, basically, in the sense to get what she needed to get.
And the thing is, that's not to say that there aren't affluent people of color who are of a darker hue, mm-hmm. but I have heard the term acting light skin as if that means, like, if you are subscribing to wanting, you know, to have more, you're aspiring to be greater, then part of that behavior is acting light skin, and the perception of you changes, how people view you changes because of that. Yeah,
it's crazy.
It is. Yeah, that the first time I heard that, it blew my mind, and it was in conversation with a colleague about another colleague, and one colleague said that this particular person, he was like, "Yeah, she's real light skin," and I was like, "She's like my complexion, if not darker," and I definitely don't consider myself light skin. Well, one, he told me I was in denial, and I gave him the finger, but then he was like, "No," he was like, "You know, she just kind of acts like skin, I guess, you know, like her hair and everything, her whole style, the way she carries herself. So when I see her, I see a light skin black person." I'm like, "But she's not
right.
That's light. Weird."
That's a new one on me. Okay, so we'll run through some of the topics that are brought to the table in the film, and we can kind of just shoot around. So one thing was predominantly white institutions, because a lot of the conversation that has come out about this film is that it's a modern day school days, a modern day higher learning, but it definitely is looking at black students at a white school, particularly an elite white school. You know, this could be black students at an Ivy League, mm-hmm. you know. And what comes along with that particular experience, and a few things come to mind. I'm going to just throw topics out there and you guys, you know, respond. So dating and interracial relationships, how does that present itself in this film? I found it interesting that Sam and Troy, we are made to understand that they had dated.
Yeah.
Because they definitely seem pitted against one another when we do meet them. And then the fact that they are both now in interracial relationships when we first meet them. But dating in interracial relationships.
I thought that part of it was good. You know, once you get with Sam and her issue with trying to hide dating a white person because of not wanting to recognize the white side of her.
Ruin her public persona.
Yeah. And really, you know, the other brother trying to hit on her and feel like he's the most eligible black person on campus. You're like, okay. And he only really likes her for her total being downness, you know, like mm-hmm. Her whole militant stuff. He's just
her passion.
Yeah. He love it, but never really seemed to really try to get to know her, or she just kept him at bay.
Right.
And then, you know, with,
He was wearing me out.
He was. Come on, Sam.
I said he was wearing me out.
Yeah.
He was ready for a revolt. Come on, Sam.
And Troy's character feeling like he was almost forced to date her. Yeah. And you were kind of like, does he really like, I'm not sure, like, does he really like white girls, or is he like, this is just part of me having to go down this path, is I'm going to have to date a white girl, you know?
And was it a white girl or this white girl?
Right.
That particular
setting, yes. But I'm pretty sure if his father has his way, I would not be surprised if he steered him to a white chick.
And then his response to Coco at the end, even though they hooked up, mm-hmm. and he clearly was comfortable with her mm-hmm. and could be himself with her. And when she wanted to make it something that, you know, we can be a little bit more public, he was,
I wondered about that just because I thought they both could see each other playing the game. Like, she seemed to always call him out on, you know, trying to be down and why he has to do this, and clearly telling him, oh, I see you playing the game. He never admits it to her, but I think from what I gathered, he knew that she was trying to fit in as well, and she had her own little issues. And I guess because she was able to open up to him mm-hmm. and kind of be like, well, we're both playing this game and, you know, having to do this, and I can be honest with you, I guess she took that as maybe I can get closer. And he's like, yeah. I thought he kind of saw that and was like, no.
Yeah. Interesting, though, because I thought Sam and her white guy, I thought they were a good couple. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I thought it was like iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. I didn't look at them and say interracial couple. Like, right. You knew they were. Mm-hmm. But they had a genuine connect. So for me, no issue there. Troy and his white girl was kind of funny because I think, like, even though he was steered in that direction, I felt that's when we saw the brother in him the most. Like, shit, if a white piece of ass gonna be handed to me, I'm gonna hit it. You know, why not? And he explained it. He was like, you know, reparations. 40 white bitches and a mule. Like, you know, it ain't all bad having to live up to dad's expectation. He gave it to me, so let me see if it is what it says it is. You know, I don't love her. You know what I mean? I don't love her. You know, I ain't gonna wife her or nothing like that. But, you know, if they put the candy in front of you, I'm going to taste it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when I was like, oh, there go the brother in here right there, you know. And in his interaction with Coco, I think they just saw each other for who they really were. Like, we can fuck with each other, but I ain't marrying you and I ain't marrying you. You know, it was, I don't think it had anything to do with the race. Like, I could see his character with a black woman as well, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was on a chase for a white girl. I think, like we said, it was set up by his dad mm-hmm. and the man in him, you know, not all men, but he was like, oh, shit, yeah, a piece of white candy, all right, you know, give it to me. Mm-hmm. So for me, that I didn't really fixate on the interracial dating in that movie, even though they tried to make it apparent. Mm-hmm. For me, it was just like, you know, outside of the white girl, they kind of portrayed her as like, you know, I'm going to do all things I need to do to keep my mandingo, you know, like, boo, you know, like, let me do this, like, you know, come on, boo, you know, and I think it speaks to, like, some of our persona of, you know, the white girl that would do any and everything. You know, that's some of our assumptions, and it could be completely wrong, but I liked it. You know what I mean? I got a kick out of hearing him say, you know, 40 white bitches in the meal. You know what I'm saying? Like, for some, it's just something that, you know, yeah,
He liked it. I mean, he was just like, all right. And I think part of that with the movie and playing identity, I think the fact that she was that so like, oh, I have a black man as my man.
My
and
boo,
She would, you know, push that. And I think he was just like, all right, well, I'm going to just play in it. And I'm all right. So when I'm around you, I'm gonna do things that are very black around you because that clearly turns you on. Mm-hmm. So let me just, you know, do that.
And back at you behind your back over.
But, I mean, clearly, I think, you know, I guess the part of him being with Sam was at least like that seemed to be more his choice. Mm-hmm. And I would guess I'm sure the father has something to do with them breaking up. But that was interesting because I was like, why are they bringing that up? He ain't saying that, but I was like, okay, at least it lessens the blow of them being like, we don't like each other and we are on totally ends and I'm going to just do anything and anything to win this, you know, versus you feel like, okay, like there is something there where they know each other so they won't go full in like hate on each other.
Yeah. And you know what it just made me think of? Like when you go away to school or anything, I think not even if you go away to college, like when you were 18 and you're stepping out into the world exploring, you're attracted to that thing that you've never had before. And I know for me on college, like, oh, I was instantly attracted to certain type of guys that didn't exist in the neighborhood I grew up in. It was like mm-hmm. they piqued my interest. So maybe Troy and Sam, that's how they piqued each other's interest. Like, mm-hmm. you know what? I ain't seen this girl around, you know? Mm-hmm. And she's like, who's this elite black dude? You know, who's this black dude that carry himself this way? So for me, like I said, I didn't really get a feel for like the interracial dating so much in there. But that was definitely one of my favorite parts or one of my favorite lines, you know? Mm-hmm.
This is just part one of our discussion on the movie Dear White People. Tune in next week for part two. We will continue our discussion and we'll be joined by actor Brandon Bell, who plays Troy Fairbanks in the movie. For any comments and feedback, please hit us up at Black Is Online on Twitter and Black Is Magazine on Facebook, or via email at Casey@blackisonline.com. If you'd like to leave us a review, you can do it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio under Black Is. And for more about the Black Is Network, please check us out at www.blackisonline.com. Thanks for listening.